Hey, everybody, welcome back to Opera Now. I'm your host, Michael Rice. That's right, every week I'm here doing this show for you, the fans, the professionals, spreading the word of opera. I want to thank everybody for listening today. We've got a good show today, so we'll jump right into things. Let me introduce my esteemed panel. We have joining us Matt Barresi.
Hello, hello.
Matt may be dropping in or out for reasons we have not yet figured out, but keep listening. He'll pop back up again. We also have Brian McGilvray.
Hey.
Ethan Watermeyer.
Good evening.
The resident Jubu. Once again, covering our bets.
Yeah, thank you.
And are you offended by that?
No.
Good, because I'm going to keep saying it.
I am.
Keep it on.
And we also have a new new member, Mr. Vale Rideout.
Greetings.
The famous outlaw.
In Liechtenstein.
Boom, bada, boom, bada, boom, bada, Vale Rideout. Vale Rideout.
I was sure hoping you'd sing that, Michael.
He wanders the west with his gun. Vale Rideout. Yeah.
You know, Shut I'd up. Like to fill this entire hour with that and variations on the theme.
We may.
That's what we're all about.
If we run out of sweet.
Actually, you know, that's in line with our topics today. That's not a bad opera. Vale Rideout. The cowboy. Call it the cowboy.
Yeah, I travel the west with products to sell.
Yes. He sells Hoover we'll vacuums.
We'll get into that later. No, no.
It's an even better idea than Dennis Moore.
Dennis Moore, Dennis Moore.
What was that? Squilo will travel.
What was that, Vale?
Or Ali Hakim, you know.
Of course. Mr. Eddie Arnold. So let's jump right into things today, again, as I say every week. I want to do a follow-up because we've gotten some comments on the website, operanow.blogspot.com, as well as I've received some emails about this whole Pol Pot / Paul Potts situation from the tenor, the guy from this car phone salesman. I speculated maybe he's a used car phone salesman. I don't know. From Britain's Got Talent. He came in and he sang Nessun Dorma, sang a couple other things, and won Britain's Got Talent. 100 grand, 100,000 pounds. He's in the studio now, or will be within the next 2 days, I imagine, with Simon Cowell producing a CD. And I wanted to gauge everybody's opinions on what this is. He's come under some flack. A lot of people thought they found out that he had studied voice and that he had sung for Pavarotti and Ricciarelli, Katia Ricciarelli, a famous soprano.
So people the horror.
People got mad at that and they thought he was being disingenuous. Now, I would like to go on the record and saying, you know, there's no way somebody's going to get up and sing any type of operatic aria without having some kind of training. So anybody who thinks that he just woke up one day and could sing is full of shit and has no clue about anything.
What about Tito Ruffo?
Well, never mind. Shut up. And the other point I want to say, just because he sings for Pavarotti or sings for Ricciarelli, these famous people, it doesn't mean anything. If he had sung for them if you know something really was going to come of it, they would have taken him under his wing and he would have been off and maybe he'd be singing opera now.
Exactly.
So that's another... I think something that people are kind of overreacting about. One question, a comment I saw from our old man, Greg Peebles, a frequent collaborator on the show. His issue was that, and I hope he doesn't mind me quoting this, he put it up on a website, a comment, but I thought it was interesting. You know, his problems were, A, this is a call-off, and B, the microphone situation. For people who don't know, I mean, everybody knows Nessun Dorma. It's the national anthem of opera. It's become that from, like, the World Cup and Pavarotti singing it. So everybody knows it, even people who have never seen an opera before. But that aria is one small part of a very difficult role, one of the more difficult roles for the tenor operatic voice. So just because somebody can sing that one song doesn't mean that they're an opera singer.
Well, and one small appearance on a talent show, even if it is, you know, high profile on television, is one small part of a very large and quite crazy career.
Yeah. So I'm wondering what you guys think of this. What does it say for the, you know, the people who, you know, the people who enter the Cardiff Singer of the World, they win maybe 15,000-20,000 pounds. The Met Opera competition, you win 15,000. This guy won 100,000 pounds for this thing.
Wow.
Well, that's just kind of a random aspect of it. I mean, he just sort of, it's a right place, right time type of a deal. My own feeling is it was great with the story of him being an ordinary guy and going through and winning the competition and singing for the queen. If that had been the end of it, that would have been a great story, I think. But when Simon jumps in with the record deal and all that, that's when I sort of got ticked off. Because, you know, if you're just in a talent show and you win it, then you're judged according to that talent show. But then if you start cutting a record deal, well, then it's fair game to judge you according to people who, you know, cut records. And he's not really in that league by any stretch. And it just sort of overhypes it and kind of spoils the whole thing.
Well, this is going along the whole terms of it being, like, opera and operatic type singing, or even just singing in a foreign language, has kind of become the adult contemporary music of the day. People like Andrea Bocelli, people like The Voice, that British dude. So,
there's nothing wrong per se with him cutting a record, but I think it spoils it. I mean, I think it's bad for him. You know,
why?
I think
he's getting money hand over fist. That's great for him.
The money is fine, but in terms of his reputation, I think it's not ideal. I think you'll suffer from it because thrown into a ring.
It depends what his intentions are down the road.
But he's a product that is being sold. He's not in control of selling it. He has Simon Cowell and producers and he is in a business that is selling him as a product, and that's
That's exploitation, isn't it?
Well, it could be.
Why? The man just made $100,000.
If you know what you're getting into, and if he knows what he's getting into and is willing to accept those things, then it's, you know, then how much exploitation is that?
Well, it's artistic exploitation. It's not monetary exploitation.
Yeah, I don't... What do you mean?
It's an overhyped product. And I personally wouldn't want to be that myself.
Well, exactly, but if it sells in the business, you know, and it makes money, then investors are going to try to make that work and sell it. And it's, you know, as a singer myself, I mean, I think that's an unfortunate thing, and I wouldn't want to be in that position. Okay. But I can't.
For $100,000, you wouldn't want to be in that position, Vale?
Well, like I said, I think part of it is part of my experience is that I actually consider myself lucky that I didn't get an opportunity like that when I was younger. I tried out for Star Search, and I did these other
Awesome. Sorry, did you lose to the guy who sang Somewhere Over the Rainbow?
You did the spandex, the whole nine yards.
I lost it to a singing monkey, if I was Josh Groban's age when, you know, he began, and, you know, Celine Dion came up and put me in front of lots of important people and said, "We're going to make you, you know, a multimillionaire," I would have done it. And kudos to Josh Groban for the career that he has at such a young age. But I'm glad I'm not in that. I'm glad I wasn't in that position. I can just say that, I guess.
Well, I think the Josh Groban thing is kind of a. I don't think it's right to compare the two because, you know, he was studying theater and he wanted to be a musical theater actor. And, you know, he's got a very good voice. He has a real voice. It's not operatic, but it's pop, it's musical theater. And people are just kind of, you know, they started throwing this tenor. They started, you know, again, the minute he starts singing in a foreign language, suddenly they think that he's an opera singer. And that's not at all the case. And I don't know. I've seen some comments by him saying they wonder if he's going to start to move into operatic repertoire. And he says he's being careful about it. And frankly, I don't think he doesn't have that type of voice at all. The style is not, he doesn't have any of that kind of sense of style to it. He's got a real voice, but it's not an operatic voice. And I think just people, they try to graft. It's amazing. They try to graft that he's this opera singer. They try to graft on that, you know, Paul Potts is an opera singer. And yet, you know, people don't go. Opera companies are struggling, and why is it they love the idea of opera, but they don't want to go see an opera?
No, I think it's just that. I think that, and I actually think that this British guy and Josh Groban are actually kind of similar. I view them as such because they got a start with a big flame, something that just blew up, and everyone was really excited about them, and the product sold, and they sold albums. But where they'll be in 5 years is the question, and that for the artist himself or herself, that's a concern. But for the for the investor in the business, they don't care at all. And so as an artist myself, I think it is unfortunate in a way that people think that they sing opera, and I'll meet people all the time that are like, oh, you're a tenor. Oh my gosh, I love Josh Groban and I love Andrea Bocelli. And I'm like, well, good. Exactly. I think it's at least it's nice that they're closer to what I do than someone that listens to rap and hip hop and has no ear for opera at all. At least that's the good side of it. The bad side of it is that they're thinking that what I do is what Josh Groban does, and this guy,
Matt, have we lost you, or are you just being silent?
No, I'm here. Okay, I saw Paul Potts on the Today Show late this week, or actually I saw a teaser for it, and he sounded like hell. I don't mean in relation to his – I mean in relation to his own performance. His voice was shot, because I'm sure they've been trotting him out in a little dog and pony show since he won Britain's Got Talent. And he sounded absolutely smoked compared to when he won that show. And now I understand when they make this record, they'll be able to get a good take of him, and they can make as many takes as they want. But already you can see the strings are showing here. Like, he's perhaps trained some, but not enough. And he can't sing as much as they're having him sing right now, and already his voice is shot. But whether this album becomes the next big crossover thing, and everybody in Middle America has it in their stocking this Christmas, or whether he falls right on his face and goes away, there'll be another Paul Potts, and there'll be another singing plumber, and singing cop, and singing blind guy, and all these people who either win an amateur contest, or there's some hook where people feel warm to them. And I think the people listening to that music is great, even if it never really makes the jump all the way to people buying a ticket to the opera. The tragedy here is that there's, they could have in their stocking a Veil Rideout CD that would be better, and then a real opera singer would be making zillions of dollars instead of a cell phone salesman who fell face first into something. That's the tragedy.
I think Mike is onto something.
He fell face first and knocked one of his teeth out, obviously.
Yeah, Britain's Got Talent should be called Britain Needs Orthodontist, because the myth is perpetuated in Paul Potts.
No, but what Mike was saying, I mean, is this bringing people to opera, or is it in fact keeping them from it? Is it an excuse?
It keeps them from at all.
Yeah,
it keeps them,
I think,
in a bubble
I agree
world
with that.
There's
the
secondary world of opera now that is
opera
that
light,
is
right?
Opera pop albums, which is fine. Which is fine. I'm not trying to be an old stick, but it's not really what opera is about. It's not what happens. On
in
the
other
stage.
Words, from the point of view of the industry itself, they shouldn't look on this phenomenon as some kind of an ally.
I don't think it is. I really don't think it is. It's not an enemy, but it really has nothing to do with it.
Right.
It's adult contemporary music that is not
going
to translate.
If people are not learning what opera really is capable of, which they don't from these singers, then that is a shame, because opera is capable of the most amazing music and the most amazing singing. And these don't show them. They show a lot. It's like light beer. It's like watering down things. It's just not. It's half of something and half of something else, and not a whole of anything.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask
amplified.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
I actually did watch America's Got Talent. I'm assuming it's pretty much the exact same format, and three
only
judges
minus the Hoff.
Exactly, minus the Hoff. Three judges, everybody votes every week for their favorite performer. So, I mean, I guess we do have to keep in mind, it's not an opera competition. Mm-hmm. These are not all opera singers singing every week against each other. They're not.
Of course.
It's just a multi, it's like Star Search.
There could have been some guy spinning plates
and
right
that's,
after him.
On America's Talent, it was everything. They had jugglers. They had dancers, they had singers, pop singers, classical singers, they had cloggers. I mean, it was kind of ridiculous. Although some of the people really were talented. So you brought up a good point. Why did this guy win? Why do people, obviously he's so popular, people really were intrigued by whatever, impressed by his voice, the fact he was a, quote, opera singer, yet did it increase the popularity of opera in Britain or anywhere?
I think they were more impressed by the fact that he's, and not to, but he's kind of a homunculus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this the downtrodden guy, that's what they like. It's like, I guess it's Rocky.
That's it.
You know, it's the Karate Kid. That's what they enjoyed.
Well, it is, and I want to add a point that I thought of with this whole issue, and that is that for some reason in American popular culture...
Or British,
you know,
popular
culture. Well, no, I'm going to separate.
And, oh, okay.
And I don't see anyone, you know, even on Bravo, doing, like, things about opera or the arts. I mean, well, they sort of did a music theater thing. It's sort of about auditions, and they followed, you know, actors and auditions in New York City, and that was kind of artistic on Bravo. But even Bravo and even, like, other outlets in America don't seem to even touch on opera. But in Britain, there was a whole television show about, you know, finding these unknowns that could, like, go in and they'll do a production of Aida. And then there's this Potts guy. But then there's also, like in Japan, like, opera stars are, like, enormous, like, celebrities. And there's something about the popular culture in other places, and I'm not saying all other places, but I just, that makes me kind of sad that we, for some reason, our money and business and popular culture machine doesn't seem to think they have anything to grab onto with opera. And I think there's a lot there. I just, it's a shame.
Right. Well, it's, and again, I've said before, and other people have, you know, when you tell somebody they're an opera singer, they seem very interested by it, but then it just falls off after that. And none of them want to go. I think it is because they think that opera's for people in pearls and wearing, you know,
capes and top hats.
Mink stole and fucking monocles.
Can I just say it?
It's in a foreign language, and that's what...
We're more of a nation of Philistines than England is.
Well, that could just be true, I guess, but... Is it... I think still it is this conception that opera is for the elite. It really is.
But people love elite. They love elite.
But they don't like elite, old money elite. They like, elitism is in, you know, Paris Hilton elite or Lindsay Lohan or people like that.
Hmm.
And that's why I think that, you know, if somebody's going to, if Peter Gelb's going to sex things up a little bit on stage, I don't think it's such a bad thing in the long run. And maybe if it gets people interested and it'll swing back around, and if we lose some of the singing, it'll swing back. But
did anybody see the Barbara Seville cast perform on the David, I think it was the David Letterman show?
Oh, that was awful.
Oh, we went over that.
It was absolutely terrible, and I know you did go over that, but it brings to mind, like, who chose that? And then, you know, why can't we choose the sexy good things, the exciting things in opera?
You got these fucking chickens, you know, squawking at each other. That was a disaster.
Choices like that just hinder the progression, you know, into the popular culture. And
this woman with a 9-foot wig, you know, God, terrible.
So. Well, I mean, America is just a different culture. It just is.
It's,
I mean,
totally
we have a more callous, cavalier attitude towards fine art in general. It's just, I think of it as more of a baseball culture.
It is. And baseball's a great game, don't get me wrong.
No, but it's just...
It's probably more of an ultimate fighting culture.
Are more people going to opera in England, though? I mean, opera, England is England is pretty trashy these days.
No,
I mean, really.
Yeah.
I feel like your average Brit on the street is not that much different than your average American on the street.
I'm not trying to say it's all Jeeves and Worcester over there. I'm just saying, you know, there's probably a more general level of awareness, and it's probably inculcated from a young age in more people per capita than it is here. And there's also an attitude in America, the sort of American exceptionalism, and where everything American is good and anything foreign isn't. And opera is always probably will be perceived as a foreign art form. So that's another big factor, I think.
Well, here's a question. You know, we think about opera as, you know, we are like, oh, no, opera is perceived as being for the elite. I wonder, and I'm not saying that it is, but I wonder if opera isn't to some extent for the elite. Like, if you don't, I wonder if you can really enjoy it without...
Not if you're Italian.
Without, well, see, if you're Italian, speak the language that they're singing, though. And you have a tradition of it in your culture, of those stories and of that kind of singing. On this side of the pond, if you brought a bunch of folks off the street into the Opera House and gave them free tickets and they watched it and they really got to see what it really is beyond Andrea Bocelli on Oprah, I don't know if they would they love would they fall in love with it?
Well, this
or would they not?
This kind of falls in line with actually something that Brian sent me, a review of Christopher Hitchens and his latest book about religion by a guy named Paul O'Donnell at SomaReview.com. One of Western civilization's worst follies involves men in robes chanting and gesticulating like they're trying to lure King Kong, the Great Kong, only what they're up to is even more bizarre, acting out myths bastardized from the pagans and the like, all to the glory of the elite. There's constant talk, moving on, constant talk among devotees of reaching out to the young, lest the ancient lore and practices die out, the parallel there being opera, the art form dying out, and to the poor, since the higher planes are not for the privileged alone. But please, the faithful participate precisely so they can feel superior to those who don't, quote, get it. They spend on one ritually repeated performance that could feed hundreds. As for the young, particularly young boys, this elite famously sacrificed them, even castrated them once upon a time for the sake of their pleasure. So maybe that is the case.
And the joke there being, you think he's talking about religion, but he says, I refer, of course, to opera.
To opera.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Well done, Brian. Nice save.
Well done.
I kind of hoped that I'd made that clear, but this is an opera podcast.
Sorry if I stepped on it.
Not a pagan podcast.
Well, you have to ask if, like you said, Brian, the culture here is completely different from the culture in Europe. They're much more appreciative of classical culture than America is at the moment. But that said, I've always thought, and I've been thinking about this the last couple of weeks, who knows, you know, opera has been around so much longer in Europe. So they've had,
that's true.
They've had another couple hundred of years to be used to it, to appreciate mm-hmm. it, to let it develop in their own cities, their countries, and
language.
Yeah. And the language exactly is another factor. But here, I mean, it's only been around. When did Americans really start going to the opera at all? Late 1800s, maybe, in terms mm-hmm. of really established opera houses coming into play. So right. Who knows, 100 years from now, opera might be pretty big, you hope.
And certainly a repertoire in English is only becoming established now.
Exactly.
And certainly in American English.
Maybe 50 right? years from now, 100 years from now, there'll be, you know, people will really, it'll be a part of our culture. At least that's what we can hope. Yeah.
Well, let's hope so. I want to end this now because we've been going on for a while. But I just wanted to touch on it again because we had gotten some emails and some comments about it. So. Now, moving on to another quick story, which seems to kind of be the opposite of what we were talking about as far as people not being interested. Houston Grand Opera post increases to subscribers. They posted a 25% increase in season ticket holders over the last year, and its highest rate of subscription renewals since 1955, which was its founding. 18% in total contributions for the past season. They've got multi-year million-dollar gifts they're getting. So maybe it is swinging back and becoming more interesting. Maybe people are going to the opera more than... Or maybe it is the same people that have been going and are just getting interested again into it.
I'd like to know what they attribute that success to. Is it that they've had really popular shows lately? Is it that they've got better salespeople? Or is it that more money has moved to town? I'd love to know what it's about. I mean, it's great. Regardless of why it happened, hooray. I'd love to know why. I wonder if they even think they know why.
Well, they have an interesting thing coming up, which I heard about when I was at the Opera America conference. Little plug. They're doing this Song of Houston, and it's in the article too, but I had heard about it a month ago or whatever. They're doing this big project that's going to be a large-scale musical piece involving all the different ethnic groups in the city of Houston, Vietnamese, Africans, Mexicans, Indians and everything, and there's going to be, you know, pieces and art attributed to them and music that is in the style of the people and in different languages. So I mean, maybe people are looking ahead and think that's a good idea and want to be a part of it. I don't know.
They did, and it does say they dropped... Ticket prices have dropped about 20%, so that's huge.
Mm-hmm. Could be it, yeah.
I would have to imagine more people are going to go if they can afford to go.
Yeah.
you know, wouldn't you go see more movies if it dropped from $11 to $7? I probably would.
I would.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, there's enough money floating around, obviously, for opera companies to get enough of it for what they need to do. Tons of rich people in this country. Another theory I want to float is, I feel like pop culture, I don't know if this is just me, but I feel like in the last, let's say this decade, it's just sort of had it. Like, it's just sort of spent. I don't see a lot of new vitality going on.
In pop culture, you're saying?
Yeah, just overall, you know, rock and roll, whatever you want to, you know, even even hip-hop seems to be sort of stagnated.
Well, is that because of a lack of creators or talent, or is it because of the boutiqueification of, like, is from the depletion of a mass culture because of the iPodization of society?
Well, there's that. I mean, there's everybody finding their niche, and you have fewer mass movements, you know, where somebody just becomes a transcendent type star, I guess. But if that's what you're getting at,
mm-hmm. Yes.
I'd like to think that we're moving back to a more creative time in popular culture, where writers and composers and talent are more appreciated than what I feel like the late 90s through like now has been reality, mm-hmm. TV, reality, you know, Paris Hilton.
Yeah, they're going
Survivor.
Into rehab. We're telling the people who've been famous, we're throwing them in jail and we're putting them in rehab. Saying we want something
that's
there.
That's right.
Yeah.
So at least some people may be turning toward certain art forms, including opera, obviously, that they feel have more Absolutely. Potential for further growth. And
I don't know about that.
Why not?
I mean, not that it doesn't, but I don't think people are turning to it.
Turning
I can
to
tell
opera?
By my subscribers.
Well, I mean, not your subscribers, but I don't think ticket sales are doing all that poorly nationwide.
True. Yeah.
No, I think who
and,
said
and in terms
that
of endowments and development. Sorry, go
who
ahead.
Who said about pop culture? Was that Matt?
That was
about pop culture being. People being fed up with it?
No,
that was
Vail. That?
Vail.
Oh, Vail.
Vail right
yeah.
out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I agree. I totally agree with that. I think people above a certain age are absolutely getting fed up with
I said
pop
that.
Culture. Whoever.
Yeah,
I think people are really fed up with it. I think people, if you looked at the demographics or whatever kind of studies out there, the people who are really into the pop culture, the music scene, MTV, movies, most of TV, are probably under 21 years old. And then everybody older than that is kind of sick of being like, oh, this stuff is such crap. And we're eventually going to return to people who are going to want something better, better art, better dance, better music. It's the same thing with like the health kick. It's going in line with that. Everybody's sick of being fat, and eventually, you know, when enough people... It's true. When, you know, we're the most overweight country in the world, and
eventually... They're sick of being fat, so they decide to get their stomach cut in half.
Well,
very,
you know what I mean?
Typically like, American.
America's getting fat and stupid, and I think a lot of people are getting sick of it, so they're eventually going to go back to, you know, trying to get in shape and maybe go to some opera. I hope. I don't know.
Well, is that like
that's just
down?
That's just my theory. Thank you. Thank you.
I'd like to elaborate on something we touched on earlier, but I have a theory about America's operatic voice, finding its operatic voice, and that is that when we have English or American, you know, English language, American operas being written that embrace comedy more. I mean, I don't see hardly any new works except for, and I'm gonna plug Matt. And Don Imbroglio, because I got
more information available at HilliardandBrazy.com.
Thank you.
There
you go. Limited. But no, seriously, like when we in our culture, when we're able to start embracing and celebrating comedy and opera, and I'm not sure the argument of why we don't have that is another argument. But when we find that, I think is going to be a very exciting time for opera and a time of finding like a more complete art form in America.
That is a great point because I think America has always been on the cutting edge of what is funny. I think people take their comedic cues from American culture.
Definitely.
So why aren't people producing funny operas?
Yeah, and comedy is so important in the United States. And if we're saying that perhaps the Europeans have had opera speaks to them more and it's been a part of their culture more and it relates to their history, to their politics, to their attitudes, to their sensuality, to this, to that. And we've only had American opera for a few decades and, you know, most of it's about like cowboys and things because we're hoping that'll light people up. But it might be we just haven't found the American voice in opera yet, and it may, hopefully, for me, it maybe comedy is something that once, yeah, what as Vail said, once we find more comedy in opera, the Americans will react better.
Absolutely.
I think it'll just complete the operatic circle more. It'll make the art form.
Then finally, opera will be done.
And then
we can lay it to rest.
Finally.
Opera is over.
Yes, Dominer.
Look who died.
Guess who died? Opera.
Ladies and gentlemen,
and then opera just sign off.
Is dead. I'll just blank out.
Sorry, Michael.
Don't stop.
So, Opera Wars, episode 6. Yes.
Well, let's hope they make some funny operas. Because
seriously.
There's not many. Even the old ones aren't that funny, but that's a whole other story. Let's move on to something, another follow-up. I like that we're following up on stories now. Shows we're really, just like Bill O'Reilly, we're going to keep you abreast of the situation every
week. Right. We think of that, Bill.
We're looking out for you.
I think it's a culture war. I think it is. These guys are bullies, and you got these activist judges out there doing all kinds of garbage. Nobody's looking out for the folks and the kids. It's terrible. It's terrible. And that's the talking points.
You know, it's amazing that there's not yet an anti-Opera Now podcast or blog. I'm waiting for the Keith Olbermann to your Bill O'Reilly that can follow up by counterpointing you each week.
That would be great.
That's gonna be started by our dear friend Kevin Keyes.
Yeah, probably.
Like, you guys are full of shit.
The octogenarian
old school rules.
The octogenarian opera now. Opera then.
Never give in to the masses and what they want.
Neil Shikoff, smarting from Vienna State Opera Fair, withdraws from Salzburg. Tenor Neil Shikoff, those of you who remember, of course, there was some talk that he was up for the position of the new intendant at the Vienna State Opera. He was overlooked, and apparently now he was passed over for the position, and he is now withdrawn from his major engagements at Salzburg this summer.
He's taken his vocal ball and gone home.
He has. He's very upset. He wrote a letter, I need a break. He continued to find some rest, to sort out my life and priorities, distance myself from intrigues and disappointments, and reclaim my innermost being.
God!
What a horse's ass.
Self-important much?
I like him. I like Neil Shikoff.
He's hopping on the Jubu bandwagon or something.
Maybe. Namaste, Neil Shikoff.
Namaste, Neil.
There's no way I can go on with this anymore. I gotta go find myself.
I wonder what he was. I wonder what he was like.
I get all these spiders off of me.
I wonder what he was like when he was a young Stop. Singer. You know, what did he do when he was a young singer? Like went to auditions or was turned down for some.
Oh, he probably was a bloodletter.
Find him his young self.
Yeah. Maybe he was a bloodletter. I don't know if that was happening at the time. It's all speculation. I would like to say.
What does the Salzburg thing have to do with the Vienna thing?
Yeah, I didn't get that either.
He just needs
is there
to
supposed
withdraw.
To be some? Is it just like a pouting gesture, or is there some connection?
I don't.
Should the people at Salzburg care that he didn't get the job at Vienna, or vice versa?
Well, he's
or?
Been there for a long time, so I think he's saying, "I'm fed up with you, Austria. I can't take it anymore. I gotta go back home." He's like squeaky voice
like
teen. It sounds more like squeaky voice teen from The Simpsons, I guess. But I imagine as a tenor, his voice is a bit erratic up high.
I think just when he hears the Austrian accent, it reminds him of the bad place that he's in right now, and it's just he needs to get away from it.
Yeah. I wonder where he's going to go to.
He watched The Sound of Music for the
someplace with no Austrians. He's going someplace with no Wolfgang Puck restaurants, with no Ludwig von Drake cartoons. He's just getting away from it.
Maybe Arnold should try to appeal to him. Neil Shikov, we need you in the Austria. We need you with the opera, with the singing of the tenors. We got the Paul Potts. It's very popular now. We need to bring
you have
back.
To find the middle ground.
You know, to go to, you go to Salzburg. We bring you back to the Vienna. It'll be beautiful. It'll be fantastic. I can't believe it. It'll be wonderful. Maybe you could come to California. We could have you minister of opera in my state of California. I'm trying to create a new European Austria, a new Austria here in the States. It's going to be fantastic. I can't believe it.
Wow, that's really good, Michael. Bravo.
That was excellent.
Thank you.
That's really excellent.
Thank you.
That's one of the best Arnold imitations I've ever heard.
Wonderful. I appreciate that.
Wait, is he actually logged onto our call? I think Arnold is. Yeah. Is
Hello,
Arnold.
Vale. Good to see you again. How are your pecs coming? I hope they're going well. You got to do the Arnold press. You bring the weights before you, then you pull them out, and then you push them up. But you're making the shoulders and the back of the shoulder blades. That's why I got so huge when I was Mr. Universe. And I would have the women, and we would be making love with them right there backstage. They would be oiling me. It'd be fantastic. But now I don't want to do that anymore. It was wrong. Now yeah. I make a governor.
Say the phrase. Say his phrase, man.
What phrase?
What do you mean, what phrase?
The girly man?
Arnold. No.
I'll be back.
Thank you.
I'll be Barbara Bach. I also did Barbara Bach. But that's another story. So anyway, that went out for
okay.
a long time.
And see.
You can sustain it, though. You can sustain it, Michael.
I hope so.
Welcome back to Arnold now.
Hopefully Neil will recover. He's in seclusion right now.
Neil, good luck, Neil.
Looking at this picture, he's got like one of those Martin Short ears. One of his ears sticks out over his hair.
I'd say Neil's had a little work done, maybe.
Yeah,
the picture looks like Martin Short.
It does. It looks like he's got Kenny Rogers type work done.
Yeah, ooh, Botox in the forehead, maybe. Yeah.
But you know, I have to say, whatever's going on with him, Neil Shikoff can frickin' bring it.
He
on
can.
Stage.
Oh, I love Neil Shikoff.
I mean, yeah.
He's
he
great.
Can bring it. He is one of the best singing actors in opera that I've ever seen.
But this
isn't he notorious though for like stage fright and stuff
yeah,
like that?
I don't know, man. But
yeah,
I have heard he is crazy like a shithouse rat.
But he just brings it.
But that's a good. I think that's a good thing. Yep. That's part of his.
Some
excitement.
Of the crazy, shithouse rat singers are some of the most amazing.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
of course.
I mean, he's just. I mean, ridiculous.
For the record, Neil Shikoff, I love him. Great singer. I think he's being goofy with this whole thing.
Could be.
Crying into his small little coffee mug, his Vienna style coffee mug.
Yeah, maybe.
But
you know, the guy's been bringing it for you know.
Oh yeah, of course.
30 years.
He's fantastic.
What the hell?
And I'd like to apologize for my tangent. I don't know what the hell was going on there. I thought I was on America's Got Talent. Maybe I'll submit it to the Hoff.
Maria's going to call you tomorrow.
I hope she will.
About it. Yeah.
You're becoming the Robin Williams of opera podcasts. You just sort of let you run for
a while. I'm so cooked up, yes. That was bad, too.
No, that wasn't as convincing.
That wasn't as convincing. Good.
No, yeah. I'll cut that out. Don't worry.
It was more like Jimmy Fallon doing Robin Williams.
What? Well said, Ethan.
Thank you.
Woody Allen to direct L.A. Opera. Woody Allen directing an opera? Question mark
God.
In Los Angeles? Question mark. It'll happen in September 2008, according to Domingo.
Does he get to cast it?
No, I'm sure not. He's going to be directing Johnny Schicchi as part of Puccini's Trittico, which includes, of course, Tabarro. And I'm surprised they didn't want him to do Suor Angelica. I thought he really could have brought something to that. Because he does love women. He does write well for women. So, but no, he's going to be doing Johnny Schicchi, the first opera. Claims that he has no idea what he's doing, but he's looking forward. That's never stopped him before. And I'd like to apologize to Roberta couldn't be here tonight. Roberta is a huge Woody Allen fan, even despite everything that's happened within the last, you know, 10 or 15 years. She is stuck by
or
him.
20.
Yeah. The whole Sun Yi.
The whole marrying his daughter thing?
Well,
that thing?
We'll leave it at that. But, you know, there's a great thing, a scene from The Simpsons when they go to Japan, and Homer watches what he's watching Woody Allen filming a commercial in Japan, and it's kind of random. He's at a punching bag, and he's doing a commercial for crackers, like saltine-type crackers. And after the camera cuts off, he says, "Oh, my God, what did I do to deserve this? Oh, wait." So Roberta couldn't be here because she wanted to talk about this, but maybe she'll comment on it next week.
Well, certainly LA Opera is living up to its name of LA Opera. Yeah. Like the William Fly, Moore. And now Hollywood directors directing stuff.
As we've mentioned before, the Fly is coming there. The day after this Tritico is the Fly, and William Friedkin is the other director on this Tritico, who we mentioned early on in an early episode, who's done, you know, he did French Connection, etc. So Domingo's getting all the stars, all the big names.
So is it just like a gimmick, or
I don't know. Well, I mean they are directors. It's not like he's getting Paul Potts to direct an opera. That would be a gimmick.
I know, but I mean,
yeah, Woody Allen. I mean, still Woody Allen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you going to be able to recognize it as a Woody Allen production, or
I don't know.
That's what I want to know.
Well, he's got one of his designers, Santo Liquasto, designing the production.
And when Mira Sorvino sings Romeo Bambino Caro, you'll know it in a second.
Yeah,
the difference is he can't cast it, so he doesn't have his normal crew of actors.
He can't write the libretto either.
Right.
Yeah, and he can't write it. But
so how much Woody Allen is going to be left?
We'll
I'm just being a cynic.
We'll find out.
You're such a bastard.
Maybe
I'm
it'll
such
be set in New
pessimist.
York. Or London now.
Yeah, it's gonna have jazz soundtrack or something, you know.
Well, no, he's
Frank
got
Sinatra.
He of course had. If you've ever seen Match Point, one of his most recent films, it was Caruso. The whole soundtrack was Caruso singing. Hmm. It's a great movie too. Fantastic film. Very much like Crimes and Misdemeanors, but also just a very good movie.
And I think he is actually an opera fan.
He loves all kinds of music.
He loves music.
Jazz,
you know,
classical opera.
He's a wonderful musician himself in terms of.
I've seen him perform live at the Cafe Carlisle in New York City. We saw
he's had opera in lots of his movies.
No, he plays.
Did he sing Nessun Dorma?
Clarinet, is
he
that
plays
said?
Clarinet, yeah. Like old school jazz New Orleans clarinet.
Yeah, and he's really good.
Very good, very good.
Well, he certainly can't be any worse of a director than Robert Altman.
Did he do an opera?
He did The Wedding.
He did The Wedding.
A Wedding. And he did something else, I want to say. Maybe McTeague, or maybe another Bolcom. And
he did do McTeague, yes.
He seemed to... Based on A Wedding, he doesn't know what he was doing at all. Although I would say that his films sort of say the same thing. So have at it, Woody Allen. I think that at least you can beat Robert Altman.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, let's move on to some of the more ridiculous items of the day.
Wait, those weren't the ridiculous items?
Yeah.
Oh, that's big news. Here's a favorite of mine from the New York Times, Finding Inspiration in an Unlikely Place. A couple of decades ago, opera composers began finding inspiration in newspaper headlines, a trend that opera fans and critics have debated vigorously. It brought current issues to the opera stage, but the transformation into opera sometimes trivialized those issues. But contemporary life almost always offers a way to lower the bar. John Eaton's Pumped Fiction is set in the world of penis enlargement. Its heroine, Daphne, is an aspiring writer and personal assistant of Dr. Bloom, who declares himself, in a heroic baritone passage, the leading manufacturer, distributor, and patinee of penis pumps. I made the music up there, but this is about a guy who sells penis pumps. In the picture, he's got a penis pump. This picture in the Times, right on stage, and this guy's going to unzip his fly. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. What's going on?
Well, this should be more like, you know, an opera about spam, because when do you hear about anything like a penis or enlargement other than in your inbox?
Soon they'll be doing operas about Nigerian millionaires who have died and who need our help to get their money out of banks.
Well, also, this also totally reminded me of a puppetry of the penis.
Oh, yes. I've heard of
that.
Call
off Broadway. The two gents from, or the two mates from Down Under that came and took New York by, I think.
Storm.
Storm, no. You have to say something else. By stretch.
Yes.
And, yes.
And this, for those who don't know, and I'll give you a disclaimer right now, if you don't want to hear about it, turn off. These guys take their penises and testicles and kind of twist them into interesting shapes in little puppets, and they do a little show right on stage.
It's genital organ.
Literally?
Literally, yes.
Literally.
Genital organ.
Wow.
Yeah.
The long-lost art.
Hopefully forever lost.
It's pretty freaky stuff, I have to say.
It is.
And now we get Penis Pump Opera.
You know, reading this Penis Pump Opera article, and, you know, that seems a little crass, perhaps, but I don't think there's any topic that can't be made into a good opera if you just make it into a good opera. So this might be hilarious and melodic and wonderful. The thing that sticks out about this article is that the am I correct in saying that the composer's daughter wrote the libretto?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Speaking of Woody Allen.
Ooh, yeah.
That is creepy. Yep. Look, well, Estella Eaton, they sat down, and father and daughter sat down and thought of every penis joke they could think of and put it on stage. Yeah.
Maybe a little.
Estelle, we need more dick jokes. Can you help us out? Well.
And so this is
it sounded unnatural at first, but actually now the more people I hear people say penis pump opera, it just rolls right off the tongue, and
so to speak.
I think
no
we
pun
can
intended.
Welcome it.
I haven't seen it, or I don't know anybody who saw it, so I have no idea. It might have been hilarious. I don't know.
Well, I'm sure it was. It was fun.
Penis pumps are hilarious.
Sounds funny.
It was at Symphony Space in New York City. So if any of you Upper West Side liberal pinheads are listening to the show, send us an email, operanow@gmail.com, and give us a review. Let us know what you thought of the show.
I'd also like to know what was in the gift shop at this particular performance.
Singing the words penis pump in an operatic voice is without fail.
And I just wanted to shout out to my friend Jim Bobick. You know, he's getting a lot of play in the press these days.
Yeah, Mitchell Times. He was in that the Vox opera deal. And
He
won't stoop. There's nothing he won't stoop to, even a penis pump opera.
Or rise to.
Hopefully. Moving on to another ridiculous item. Auditions, AUTIONS, scheduled for Fat Shirley's, a trailer park opera. Taking place at trailer park opera at the Walker County, County Civic Center in Rock Spring, Georgia. They need males and females ages 10 to 75 to fill a large cast. Musicians, guitar, banjo, upright bass, violin slash fiddle, mandolin, and percussionist. It's a trailer park opera is a two-act bluegrass musical comedy that has had excellent reviews everywhere as it has been staged. Show dates are in the fall of this year. So if you're down in Georgia, there's no information about the show, but I thought it was funny. Plus the fact that they said AUTIONS. I don't know if they meant to do that. I hope they did.
So it's not an opera, then?
No, it's not an opera at all.
But it's one of those non-opera operas.
Yeah.
Great.
It's just funny to say opera in your title if the rest of the title seems very unoperatic. It's a popular thing these days. So, but it's a bluegrass musical, right?
That's what it says. Mm. So, another interesting item. I don't understand what this is. Maybe you guys can help me. Once again, any of you Upper West Side liberal pinheads who listen to the show. In the New Yorker, in the Daily Intelligencer, which is a regular column, I guess, in New York Magazine, sex diaries. Once a week, Daily Intel takes a peek at what your friends and neighbors are doing behind doors left slightly ajar. Today, the Randy opera singer, female, 35, Upper West Side, married, and polyamorous. What it is a diary of several days of her. She's married. Apparently, she has a boyfriend, though, and they have this, you know, swinging marriage, which is fine. I don't know. That's fine. And so he goes off and sees women, and she's got this regular boyfriend who she sleeps with whenever he's in town, and they're showering and soaping and scrubbing each other's backs, soaked up and caressed his blank and blank for a moment. That's a line in here. Now, the thing I don't understand is, you know, why is it the Randy opera? And they never mention anything like went to rehearsal today. Couldn't wait, you know, to... So
doesn't she say something about an audition, getting ready for an audition or rehearsing? There's something in the article or in her blog where she mentioned something that implies that she was a professional singer.
That's true, you're right.
Something in her daily ticker of activities.
I'm sorry, you're right. No time for sex because I had an audition. So I masturbated trying not to wake him up. All I know is that, you know, everybody in this business, there's a 35-year-old female who lives in the Upper West Side who's not afraid of stepping out a little bit.
Looking across the panel here, I feel like the the odds that one of us hasn't slept with her is actually fairly low.
Yeah.
So at least we might want to get offline and try and figure out who this is.
At least we probably know her. Randy Opera Singer, if you're there, put an anonymous comment on our website, operanow.blogspot.com. I'm going to spread the word. Spread the word to everybody you know. If you know a polyamorous opera singer who lives in New York City, have her leave an anonymous post on the website. I'm curious to see if she's listening to the show.
No webcams involved, I guess.
No. Maybe we'll set up a personal one between, just so I can make sure that you're a woman. But after that, I'll turn it off. Let's move on to the final episode of the final segment of the show. Guess who died? Hot! Yeah, a little extra there at the end. Mac Morgan, 89, bass baritone who went on to teach voice, dies. An American bass baritone who sang on radio, television, and the stage from the 40s to the 70s, later a chairman of the voice department at BU, died June 12th in Carlton, Georgia. He won't be able to audition for Fat Shirley's. So that's a shame.
Oh, my God.
Complications of an appendectomy. Wow, at 89.
Oof.
Wow.
That's crazy.
You know, Michael,
Let me finish this before you.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Yeah. No, let's sang with City Opera and with touring companies like the Goldovsky Opera Company and with NBC Opera Company. They used to do a lot of television broadcasts of operas. Televised production of Così fan tutte with Phyllis Curtin, Francis Bible, and John Alexander. John Alexander, great British tenor.
Mm-hmm.
Appeared on Bell Telephone Hour with Joan Sutherland, as well as with Peggy Lee. And he was a big player at Tanglewood under Bernstein and Charles Munch and Leinsdorf, Seiji Ozawa. He became good friends with Norman Rockwell because he moved up to Stockbridge, which is where Norman Rockwell lived. And apparently Rockwell did a charcoal drawing of him that he used in his publicity materials, and that it's still hanging in his home. So
that's classy.
That's great. Yeah, I'm sorry, Matt, did you have a comment?
I'm about to get snarky about the segment, but I guess before that I should say that's a hell of an impressive life and career.
Yeah.
And boy, what, having a Rockwell yourself in your house?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Sign me up.
That's
for that.
Amazing.
And another person who's passed away, Hank Medress, whose vocals with the doo-wop group The Tokens helped propel the irrepressible single The Lion Sleeps Tonight.
He taught us all to access our head voice.
Yeah. The first the big countertenor of the 50s and 60s.
This book, The Secret, that's so popular these days, I haven't read it yet, but I understand that the central premise is that if you want something, you sort of say it out loud, and the law of the universe is that if you build it, it will come. And earlier this week, I knew that I was going to be on this program this evening, and I thought, no one important or famous has died this week, and there'll be no Guess Who Dies. I certainly hope someone interesting dies this week. I think I actually thought that, and I feel slightly responsible, or at least that Michael should feel slightly responsible for the death of these fine gentlemen.
Wow. That's horrible.
I think their blood may perhaps be on your hands.
Matt Brazy, you are one of the worst people I've ever met. and I would like to also say on record, I knew Hitler briefly. So that is my opinion of you, Matt Brazy.
We had coffee.
Oh, my God.
So that was the end of Guess Who Died?
Oh, I like that little tag.
It's a little
nice.
Lee Michaels. I'm at a little Lee Michaels for those of you out there. Go look him up on the iTunes.
Nice. That's
great great rock Hammond B3 player. And he used to rock out. Great singer. So listen, that's gonna wind up another episode of Opera Now. I can't believe it. It's been almost an hour.
Tune in next week to see who else Michael has killed.
Yeah. I want to do one quick follow-up. We had talked about people sending in ideas for pig operas, names for pig operas. And we got several. First of all, I want to read some from my man, Millip, who has given me some legal advice, actually, as well. I'm kind of, drawing the wagons in as a result of Opera Chic or Opera Chic getting a cease and desist from La Scala. So I'm waiting for Opera Now to come after me. And basically, he told me I have no leg to stand on. But that's, at least he was honest.
Really?
Yeah, but he's right. He's got some good ones. Così fan Piggy, Pigomeneo.
Pigomeneo.
Actually, these aren't that good. Zauberschweine, that was good. Eugene Onyebig. And his favorite, Swiney Todd. I like that.
That's good.
Swiney Todd.
And I also thought of one myself. Die Schweinsgammerfrau.
That's Schweinsgammerfrau?
Oh, God.
No,
wow.
Schweinsgammerfrau.
How about Porky and Bess?
That is, I like, wow, that. Wow, good one.
But the winner, I think, is from Alicia, who was a listener. Borfeo e Euridice.
What is it?
Borfeo e Euridice.
That's good.
That, nice. I think, is the winner. Alicia, you win.
Good job, Alicia.
Congratulations.
Alicia writing from where? Alicia from where writes?
Alicia from New York City.
Very nice.
So,
is she hot?
Alicia, you win 100,000 pounds.
of pork.
You've just won Opera Now's Got Talents.
I think that was absolutely wonderful. So congratulations, Alicia. Thanks for playing Viewer Mail. Viewer Mail. So I want to thank my panelists for coming on today. Brian McGilvray.
How about Epigony on Tareed?
You're banned from future shows. Thank you, Brian, for coming on.
You're
Ethan.
Welcome.
It is my pleasure. Namaste.
Matt Barese.
Thank you.
And the rootinest, tootinest, shootinest gun in the Old West.
Yeah.
Bail right out.
It was a true pleasure, gentlemen.
Thank you for coming on. For all you listeners out there, I want to make sure that you visit our website, operanow.blogspot.com. Send us your comments, questions, and concerns at our email address, operanow@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at the Opera Now hotline, 206-424-3617. Also, check out our website for our Facebook link. Opera Now is now on Facebook. We've got a page there. It's under my name, I think, if you're just searching for Facebook. My name, of course, being Michael Rice. But the Opera Now picture is blazoned up there, so you'll know exactly where you are. And we've got the link on our links section, some sites you want to check out on our webpage. So thanks for listening today. Today was Sunday, June 24th. I am Michael Rice, and you were listening to Opera Now.
Sweet.
Whew, what a triumph.
Good job.
Very nice.
Hey, and it was the 24th episode on 24th.
Which is also my anniversary.
Nice.
It's whose anniversary? Oh, your anniversary. That's right.
Is it really?
Today. Yep.
And here you are doing Opera Now.
Yeah, well, we got it out of the way.
That marriage is going well.
How is your youngling, Brian?
He's good. He was fussy today, but you know, it's getting better and better.
Brian just had a baby, though.
Congratulations!
And he actually
I didn't
had it himself,
actually.
Just like Junior. It's like Anu.
You had himself, baby. Just like you impregnated yourself and then just had the baby?
Yeah.
No.
It was a miracle.
I outsourced it.
That's great.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Thank hey, Matt, are you
much.
There still?
I am.
Oh, wonderful. You're sending me surreptitious...
I'm single.
Yeah.
I have no baby or wife.
If any of the ladies out there are listening to Opera Now, both Veil Right Out... Veil Right Out! And...
Veil Right Out!
And Ethan Waltermeyer... are both single.
What was that?
That was because you're Jewish, so obviously.
Oh, okay.
That's a little cantering for you.
That's a little rabbi song for Ethan.
Yeah. I assume Vale was born in the Wild West. That's why his song goes like that.
I see.
Well, wasn't so wild. Kansas is not.
That's true.
Tornadoes come. There's nothing wilder than a tornado that wipes out your entire town.
Yes.
That's pretty wild.
They're both single, so ladies.
That was you?
And I'll pass it on to them.
Well, actually, I'm not.
Oh. Well, wait a minute. To Ethan's girlfriend, I apologize. Ethan's been lying to me.
I just said I'm not married.
Oh, okay. You said you were single, I thought, so.
Oh, did I?
Yeah, so.
I apologize to my girlfriend.
You know, if you started a personals or a, you know, some kind of romantic networking section on the Opera Now website, and you use these two guys as seed for it, you know, you sort of put them up on the block.
No pun intended, yeah.
I think, no pun intended, yes. I think, you know, that could get you some hits.
Yeah.
And them, too.
Let's hope so.
So to speak. At least from the
I'm actually dating the entire female young artist program at Central City right now. So.
That's nice. There's some good picks there. There's one. I know there's at least one good pick out there.
Well, yeah. She and I are sort of dating. So, yeah.
Oh, are you really? Wonderful. What? Mazel tov.
Yeah. She says hi, by the way.
That's great. She's
as does Kevin and Leah and
whoever else. Nice, though. She's a good-looking woman.
She is.
Congratulations.
Who the hell are we talking about?
I was there. Well, we don't want to let her out now. This is a big podcast that goes out, but I was there for the romance.
Wait, are we still recording?
Of course. This is all part of the
baby.
Well, let me divulge some other secrets then. I would like to say...